we're going to... All right. Members. Okay, a couple of things. Everyone has been great about hanging in there. And we've done a lot of really good work in this conference committee today. What I'd like to do here in the next few minutes is to conclude the testimony on these outstanding issues. Senator Dibble and I have confirmed, Chairman Dibble and I have confirmed, it doesn't make a lot of sense for us to start recessing and doing counteroffers, anything tonight. People are tired. We have a long night ahead of us on the House floor, apparently, or a longish night, a couple more hours perhaps. And so,
I'm sure you don't know nothing from a long night.
I think I will soon. So we're going to conclude the MnDOT testimony. I know the commissioner is he still here? Okay. If the commissioner is here and wants to say a few words, that's fine. I think Senator Latz wants to talk about ignition interlock. And then we are going to call it a night. So that's the plan moving forward. And I don't know. In the Senate, we'll have the gavel tomorrow. And I guess just stay tuned for the time and place of our meeting tomorrow. So that's where we're at. I think where we left off, we were just concluding some conversation about sound walls. So Commissioner Zelli is here. I mentioned to the committee we're going to wrap up shortly. We're not going to take actions tonight in terms of moving offers and counteroffers. People are kind of tired, but I know you're here, and we'd love to hear from you. I know the topic is sound walls, but when we've got the commissioner, it's open mic. So if there's anything you'd like to do, anything you'd like to do.
From my youth.
I can do an impression.
Yeah, it's funny. You know, it's fun. Just one quick digression. You know, Senator Franzen and I have a bill to ask the Metropolitan Airports Commissioner, are they around here anymore? Okay, they'll hear about this now. That they could move their meetings behind the airport security zone. You know, you have to go through security to go to the MAC meetings. And so they came back and said, hey, we're fine with the citizens. We have an open mic. Any citizen can come and say anything. And I reminded everyone that Al Franken got his start at the MAC open mic.
No.
So anyway, anything you'd like to say to us?
Well, I will mention that I got a lot of greetings from elected officials when I got my appointment, and particularly our federal delegation. And I got some wonderful conversations with Senator Klobuchar and Congressman Klein and everyone else. I got two voicemails from Senator Franken, and the first one was, Charlie, it's Al. That's a really big job. I don't know. Sorrell was pretty good. You know, can you do this?
Now that's a good Al Franken.
Thank you very much, Chairman Hornstein and Chairman Dibble. I'm learning as we go, but I have been very impressed with the diligence and the thoughtfulness in this process. And I know we have a ways to go. And thinking about how we craft the financing of a transportation bill, and I'm looking forward to continuing to talk about that. I am very excited about marching forward wherever we end up to talk about a kind of a larger big picture of transportation funding and revitalizing our infrastructure in all modes. So I actually think at the end of this session is almost a beginning as much as it is a resolution toward something that we can march ahead on. And so I'm very excited about that. I think when it comes into just a mention on sound walls, and I know we're well represented by Scott Peterson, but that is one issue that I know the players and I am very familiar with, and I'm looking forward to a specific resolution on that within the parameters of what MnDOT has to work with. So I do want to mention that actually has my personal engagement. So that's one issue I'm kind of on top of. And in fact, the ombudsman who represents me is kind of on the ground in that case. So I want to at least mention
Thank
that.
You. We will, just so folks know, and we're Chairman Dibble and I's intention to spend quite a bit of time in this conference committee dealing with the finance pieces. And so I would expect and hope that if you have time in your schedule, and we'll certainly give you a heads up more than an hour notice, but it would be great to have your direct and personal thoughts about this issue, your advice. But we do plan to spend some time on that, I want to assure you,
great.
In this committee. Any quick questions for the commissioner? Great. Thanks. And any other final questions or comments on the sound wall question issue? Okay. Yes, one last one.
Chairman Hornstein, I just wanted to remind the committee that the legislative auditor has taken this on as a,
yes.
as a task.
Good reminder.
For the summer, I think they expect to have results of that investigation available by this fall.
Okay.
And we actually embrace that having a third party look at it is a good timing to do that.
Great. Well, thanks both of you. And thanks to MnDOT for clarifying your positions on this issue of sound walls.
Hire a consultant to look at
this. So
Chairman Hornstein, I know Senator Latz's arrival is imminent.
Okay.
So we can just dispense with, I think it would be good to dispense with kind of the open items or the questions that folks have.
Okay. I can begin to perhaps, Chairman. I could at least set the table in terms of the House discussion on the issue of ignition interlock. This sounds very draconian when you see a bullet point and says all ignition interlock provisions. It's not quite that way. We Representative Moline has quite a chunk of the language that's discussed here, and that has been adopted, I believe, in the policy conference committee report. So part of this issue is just knowing that this is already in, or hopefully will be in law. Barring anything unforeseen with the policy conference committee report, we'll be fine on that. Our concern, and which I think our Representative Beard can articulate better than I can, but we had Representative Hillstrom come to our little caucus meeting of transportation folks when we were crafting this plan earlier today, and she outlined her concerns. And as I recall, there were issues around people that may be involved in vehicular homicide or, much more intensive DWI kinds of infractions that would then be using ignition interlock, and that she thought that there was a disparity between kind of the more typical kinds of issues in which people would be needing to use this versus people who have much more serious DWI kinds of issues where they've harmed others and harmed property kind of beyond what's typical. And so I think she had concerns about the fact that there was no discrepancy between the two, as I recall. I mean, again, this is not my area of expertise. I'm just trying to summarize the concerns, and I know that Senator Latz has a different position. And so, but I think Representative Beard has been kind of our designee on this, and we're debating the jobs bill, which now has the energy bill, and the energy is also a very strong focus for him, so that's why he's up there now. He may come back, but did my best, I think, to articulate the House concerns. I don't know if I know that Ms. Nelson has a legal background, and if she wants to chime in, she's welcome to do that as well.
From my understanding, it has to do with the criminal vehicular operation, not the homicide, but just the operation. It has to do if you drive recklessly, or if you're drunk, if you're under the influence, and you cause damage to or you cause injury to another person, then it's criminal vehicular operation. And the understanding is that this law would automatically qualify people who are convicted of that for the ignition interlock program for company vehicles. So it's an automatic, you would qualify for the program if you get a CVO conviction.
Okay. So That's the concern, and we'll hear from Senator Latz, and then I think we can call it a night.
Mr. Chair, I understand he's 3 minutes away.
Well, I hope he's not driving back just to testify for us.
Here he is.
Michael. If it's easier, we can also hear from him in the morning as well.
We can put him on the speaker.
Oh, okay.
No, Mr. Chair, I think he's proximate, and he's not coming back just for us, as flattering as that would be.
Yes.
I think we're signing the Judiciary Conference Committee
report
so that it can be posted, so we can take it up tomorrow. He's just parking.
Okay. So for just again, I want to give people a sense of where things are headed, at least in the near term. When we reconvene tomorrow, we'll try to move some of these items that we've had discussion about today and adopt common language between the House and the Senate on these policy items. And we'll probably then begin an initial discussion of some of the less controversial finance items. For example, we have e-workplace, so you all have 100,000, we have 50,000. We'll resolve that. Similar issue on safe routes to school. So we'll get into those questions and then dispense with that, and then we can get into the meat and potatoes of the committee, which is, crafting a finance package that will pass both the House and the Senate and be signed by the governor. So it's fine with us to, I think, do we know yet when session is tomorrow? I know there's no motion. Do you have any inside information about when the House is convening? Okay.
I don't know.
Well, that's fine. I mean, I think we'll just meet through that. And I think very tentatively Chairman Dibble has proposed, and I think it'll be fine with us to meet at 9 in the morning in SOB 5. If we can get a room in the Capitol, that's going to be a little better. But I know those are hard to come by. So at this point, it's 5 SOB unless you hear otherwise. 9 a.m. tomorrow. Anything you'd want to add, Chair Dibble?
Where's Lance?
I think you described what we're going to try to accomplish.
Yeah.
We'll probably come back with our counter to the counter.
From home?
And see if that's agreeable and see if we can't get this piece off our plates. And then start
some of the less controversial finance.
And the Senate will begin to prevail upon the House on our finance position. Wisdom of our way.
Well, we know in District 61 that he's a good negotiator. So.
Welcome, Senator Latz.
Oh, come right up.
Yes.
Thank you.
We were gonna put you on speakerphone there when you called.
From the front of the Capitol.
So you're welcome, Senator Latz. It's
Thank
great
you,
to
Mr.
see
Chair.
You, former
Thank
House
you.
Member. For the new folks, he's another House-trained senator.
Yes. Or House-broken, depending on how you
yeah. And so I was just sharing with the committee, Senator, that and Chairman Latz, that Representative Hillstrom had briefed us on some of her concerns about these provisions, which I'm sure you're familiar with, her concerns, and wanted to give you an opportunity to state your case. And we're not going to take action on this particular provision tonight, but it'll be good to have your perspective, and then we'll each caucus and try to come to some resolution. So welcome to the committee, Chairman Latz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. By the way, same class in the House.
That's right. And Representative Beard isn't here, but he came in with us as well.
Of course, Representative Bernardi and I sat next to each other on the House floor my first 2 years there.
Okay, great.
4 years, actually. No, first 2 years.
And Representative Bernardi and I were.
We're all.
Last first time, yeah.
Everyone's going down on a trip down memory lane.
Yes.
All right.
So, proceed,
Mr.
Senator
Chairman.
Latz.
Thank you.
With all that,
the ignition interlock. I'm going to assume a certain level of knowledge, but I'm going to highlight for you the importance of the ignition interlock program. I carried the pilot program in Minnesota when the two counties first started it. And it's had a lot of national research and experience over the years. The goal, of course, and the proven efficacy is that when persons have the ignition interlock device installed in their car, there's a substantial reduction in the likelihood of them driving under the influence again. Because in most cases, it gets installed after the first offense or after repeat offense, depending on the state. In Minnesota, it is now mandated for a first-time DWI who has a high test, 0.16 or higher. If they get the driving privileges reinstated, it has to be with ignition interlock unless they want to choose to wait out the entire revocation period before reinstatement. Or a second offense, similar requirement, all the way up to first-degree DWIs, which is a fourth offense within 5 years or a fifth on record. It has been determined to be so effective that an experience has shown, in addition to the intention, that multiple repeat DWIs are still safe enough to put back on the road behind the wheel if they've got the ignition interlock device installed in their vehicle. And the Department of Public Safety would have the evidence basis for that because they've looked at this a lot. In fact, when we were considering implementing it in the first place in Minnesota, there's been a lot of national studies on this or experiences in other states that support that. The program is now statewide, it's up and running with multiple vendors. So anywhere in the state that you have a DWI incident, if you are in the right category, you can reinstate with the ignition interlock program in your vehicle. So with that record of success is why Mothers Against Drunk Driving supports it. Minnesotans for Safe Driving support it. The DWI Task Force in Minnesota, which I'm sure you're familiar with, but has multiple inputs, supports the ignition interlock program generally and also specifically its extension to situations involving CVO and CVH. And that's a proposal that you have before you today. So that would cover first-time offenders that get into an accident and cause an injury that would qualify for these circumstances, or multiple offenders as well. And they're still subject to the length of license revocations that are that would apply for an underlying DWI also. But right now, the ignition interlock program itself simply doesn't cover these categories of offenses. Now, there's some unique things, ways in which these categories of offenses are handled in terms of license revocation. If you were to get, for example, a CVO, you will not lose your license right away because there typically is not an implied consent license revocation that goes along with it. The officer will simply take you down to the hospital and they will draw the blood, which they're entitled to do constitutionally under Schmerber. But what that means is that there is no prompt license revocation. Now, if Steve Simon, the professor and the longtime head of the DWI task force, were here to testify, he would tell you that the single most effective thing that happens in terms of public safety after a DWI case is that prompt driver's license revocation. Because typically the criminal charges take a while to get to court, and then it takes a while to get resolved, and so on. The proposal you have before you would not replace the implied consent revocation, but it sort of would. It would provide that a proper certification promptly by an officer that there was probable cause to believe there was CVO or CVH sent to the Department of Public Safety would result in that prompt license revocation, even though criminal charges haven't been brought yet. With the CVO laws right now and CVH laws right now, you have to wait until criminal charges are brought, and then there's a complaint base, and then there's a resolution of that. So you can have months, and depending on the nature of the case, even up to a year before there's any license action taken. The proposal you have before you right now turns that on its head and goes to a very prompt driver's license revocation. So that's an important aspect of this proposal. That's in a nutshell. That's it. The other thing I was going to say is that even though it is an important piece of public safety to get that prompt license revocation, it's not enough. Because the expectation is that somewhere around 75 or 80% of persons that get their license revoked because of a DWI incident will still go out and drive unlicensed and most likely then uninsured. That is not helpful for public safety. It's counterproductive. When we had on the Senate Judiciary Committee, I think it was 2 or 3 years ago, a then assistant Washington County public defender testified. He's now the chief public defender in Washington County. That 40% of his caseload was driving after withdrawal cases. So not only does that clog the courts, but you can imagine that's not healthy for the public safety. And why do people drive? Because often they have to make a choice between running the risk that they are going to or not going to be caught without a license while they're on the road, or quite possibly losing their job, or being completely unable to transport their kids or their family to the grocery store, to school, to whatever else they need to do. They make the life choice that the whatever the percentage is, likelihood that they're going to be caught is worth the risk taking in order to keep their job. And, of course, if keeping a job means being able to pay for the food for your family, being able to pay the rent or the mortgage, and all of that. And, candidly, probably most of them get away with that risk. But when they don't, and when they do it without insurance on top of it, there's some great risk not only to the physical aspects of public safety, but if there is an accident with injuries, then there are all the financial consequences of there being an uninsured driver involved in that accident. So the proposal before you extends the ignition interlock program to the CVOs and CVHs. It extends the public safety benefits of that program to the CVO and CVH situations. And it mandates proof of insurance up front in order to get your driving privileges back under this program. And it accelerates by quite a few months, in all likelihood, the reinstatement of or the revocation of driving privileges that would trigger the mandate to have the ignition interlock device in the vehicle.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Lantz, Chairman Lantz. Questions? I know the senators are familiar with this. I don't know about the House members, but Chairman Dibble.
Well, thanks. I was going to elicit questions from the House. We touched a little bit on the concerns from the House side, and maybe we could give Senator Lantz an opportunity to respond to those.
Are you familiar, Chairman, with the—
Not with your concerns, no, Mr. Chairman.
Well, we had a brief meeting with Representative Hillstrom, and I think her concern was expanding. I mean, and again, we have no issue with this program. We completely agree with how effective it is. I know I was an early supporter of it, co-authored legislation when we were getting this off the ground. I think it's been a success. Very strong supporter. So, but the concern that Representative Hillstrom had shared with us, and we're still mulling over, has to do with expanding the program to the CVO and the CVH and the implications of that and what that means. And so that's just the general concern, and I think you did address that quite directly and specifically. So just to give you a sense of where we're at and what we're mulling over, and I know that you and Representative Hillstrom have debated this, I believe, in other venues. So,
Mr. Chairman, I understand politically it's never easy to address issues surrounding CVOs and CVHs or, frankly, drunk driving for that matter. And it was a bit of a leap for people to agree to the ignition interlock pilot program in Hennepin and Beltrami County initially. And then to extend it statewide under the leadership of Senator Murphy, who chaired the Transportation Committee at the time, and I worked closely with him in that process as well. I get that. I think this is the pro-public safety vote because it gets people who admittedly are going to be behind the wheel anyway, driving with the electronic protection of the ignition interlock system in their car, with valid driving privileges, and with insurance. And those are all conditions of having valid driving privileges to be able to do this. And the program specifies you can only drive the car that the ignition airlock device is in. And these devices are very sophisticated. They have cameras to make sure that you are the person that, you say you are, and they can verify that you didn't have someone else come in and give the breath sample to get the car started. There are rolling retests. So the camera would also capture on an ongoing basis while you're driving, you're blowing into the device to make sure that it wasn't someone else that got into the car, or you're not drinking and driving at the same time, that kind of thing. They've got electronic reporting on a prompt basis to be able to maintain the oversight on the program. But Representative Hilstrom is a prosecutor, and members, I've done both. For 5.5 years, I was at the Attorney General's office prosecuting the implied consent license revocations when I started my legal career. And I've done criminal prosecution since that time as well. So I understand both sides of this. The prosecutors are well represented on the DWI task force. And that task force unanimously supports this proposal.
We have a question from Representative Sundin.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator, can you tell me just exactly how many bad drivers this is going to affect? You know, on an annual basis, how many serious offenders are we going to be putting back on the road with this program?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Sundin, I don't have the actual numbers, and maybe someone from DPS here has them. I worked for 2 years with Gene Ryan. I'm at the DPS. She just retired, by the way, to put this package together. But I don't have the statistical data on how many CVOs and CVHs there are every year in Minnesota. I don't know if there's someone here from DPS. Oh, here we go.
Okay, sorry. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Pat McCormick with Driver and Vehicle Services. And in talking with traffic safety, we're thinking it's around 370 individuals. So
is that
approximate.
Get to your question.
Chairman, is that annually?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Representative Sundin, a follow-up?
Mr. Chairman, just another step further percentage-wise, where does that fit into other DWI prosecutions percentage-wise? You know, 370 versus what?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Sundin, I know there are about 40,000 DWIs in Minnesota a year.
Okay.
I don't know the breakdown. 40,000. The statistics that I recall is that about 40% of those DWIs will get a repeat DWI, which is a mandatory ignition interlock. Within that first category of first-time offenders, I couldn't tell you how many of them have the higher test threshold that would require ignition interlock for reinstatement. But I think it's fair to say it's a good proportion of that. So I would hazard a guess maybe 15 or 20,000 drivers a year. Maybe a little bit less than that, depending on how many reach that threshold, who, when they get revoked, they get reinstated only with the ignition interlock. And, you know, there's a cost to the program. It's about, $125 or so to have the initial installation, and then somewhere around $100, $125 a month to keep it. But then you're keeping your job, so it's a pretty fair trade. Probably comes out to be a financial benefit to have the ignition interlock program in the end as a result of that. But yeah, the numbers affecting by the CVO and CVHs is comparatively small, but I would submit the public safety benefit is actually well worth it. This is the pro public safety vote.
Thank you, Senator Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Latz, there. One initiative we have here that I still don't understand is original ignition interlock device program, use of employer-owned vehicles, authorizes a participant in the 2007 project to drive an employer-owned vehicle not equipped with the interlock device. Can you explain what you're getting at there? What is that?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Carlson, that portion of this initiative was brought forth by Senator Tomasoni But I fully support it. What happens right now, there are some people, the Ignition Interlock program currently requires that you own the car, be a personal vehicle for the device to be installed and for you to qualify for the license reinstatement. But there are people who drive employer-owned vehicles, and this would allow, with the proper safeguards in place for employers to approve it, that they can have this installed in the employer-owned vehicle and then be able to drive for work for those purposes.
And Senator Carlson and Chairman Latz, maybe this is what you're going to say, Senator Dibble, is that is included in the Omnibus Transportation Policy Bill, and in the House, that's a Carly Moline, Representative Moline provision. So,
Mr. Chair, for those interested, I do have a grid here that breaks down the license revocation periods for each category of offense, if anyone wants that level of detail. But one other thing that this bill does is it kind of aligns the license revocation with the various levels of CVO, CVH, and the existing categories of implied consent license revocations.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Dibble.
Mr. Chair, I had a very quick hallway conversation with Representative Hillstrom earlier today, and I was left with this question. Is she just opposed to this idea, or is she opposed to this idea of traveling in a transportation bill as opposed to some other kind of a bill like public safety bill? I got the sense from her that it was a kind of a process issue that she was objecting to.
Thank you, Chairman Dibble. I don't know specifically. We just talked about her objections to, I think, if there's other representatives that want to chime in here. Our brief conversation focused on the CVO and the CVH issue. I don't think she had mentioned process as much, but we could have, certainly if the committee is interested, I don't want to speak for Representative Hillstrom. We could certainly have her perspective directly tomorrow if we need it.
Mr. Chair, I think that would be useful.
Okay. We will summon Representative Hillstrom to the committee.
If I'm not incorrect, Mr. Chair.
Members, if we want to do this tonight, I guess we could try to see if she can come off the floor of the House. It's an important issue, so let's try to dispense with it. I know, again, senators are interested in moving on, but
I see every senator is wide awake in this room.
Well, this is a very exciting topic, transportation. if you ever have trouble getting to sleep, transportation finance will keep you up. As it has with me often,
no
many
doubt,
nights.
Yes.
I've had sleepless nights just thinking about transportation finance. So we'll members, if we can just hang in here another 10 minutes or so, we'll move Representative Hillstrom in and out quickly. And
You keep promising.
Well, this is a new – I didn't know Representative Latz was going to come, so now we need equal time. Representative Bernardi.
Just to fill time here, one of my relatives did the job of installing these devices into cars, and I don't think it was a very pleasant job doing that. People weren't too happy getting them in their cars. I just recall she finally did quit and got a different job. It was a second job, but kind of interesting hearing about how upset people were having them installed. And they took it on her.
Thank you. Are there any other questions for Chairman Latz while he's here?
Mr. Chair, I'll be glad to be available to listen to Representative Hillstrom, and if it raises any additional questions from the committee, I'm happy to answer those as well.
Probably a good idea to stick around. Hag Sameach, by the way.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Same to you. I was supposed to be on a panel, actually, last night at 9:30 on a legislative topic, but I had to defer to my duties here at the Capitol, unfortunately. So.
Representative Lesh is here. Not sure what that means.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, If I may, I can convey through another testifier here the support of an organization that would be relevant to this committee's consideration and Representative Hillstrom's position particularly.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name.
Good evening, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm Donna Berger. I'm the director of the Office of Traffic Safety with the Department of Public Safety. I just wanted to inform the committee that we fully support Senator Latz and this, and that it we truly believe this has real benefits to public safety. And with this bill, it allows for the suspension of the driver's license when someone is charged with the CVO. At right now, someone can continue to drive legally. It can take up to a year. Or if someone's charged with a DWI, they're revoked within 7 days. And so we fully support this as far as, you know, it really enhances all of us when we're on the roads, sharing the roads, enhances traffic safety.
Thank you very much. County attorneys are on it. There's no questions. While you're here, I have some, not the same topic, but we can kill some time with this.
Well, Mr.
I noticed, you have a question. To the topic, to the testifier, yes, to Senator Carlson.
Topic. Mr. Chair and Madam Testifier, could you tell us when you put on the, have the ignition interlock, at what point do you get the whiskey plates? Is that along with that, or is that separate? Getting the W plates.
Mr. Chair and Senator, what you're calling the whiskey plates, mm-hmm. they fall under the same category. If you have a .16 or if it's a second driving offense, you would be required to have your plates forfeited and have those plates put on.
Thank you, Senator Carlson. And welcome, Representative Hillstrom.
Mr. Chairman, Ms. Berger has one other point to convey.
Just as far as the support from the DWI task force, there is a member from the County Attorneys Association that also supports that. So there, it is fully supported by the DWI task force, this provision.
Okay, thank you. So, members, here's what we're going to do. We have Representative Hillstrom here. We're going to give her equal time. I don't want to get into a whole back and forth long debate. I'm sure that Senator Latz will want to counter, and then Representative Hillstrom will counter that.
I think you should come
to the table together. I would like
our personalities, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Hillstrom outline her concerns. We'll have a couple of questions. I'm going to put a time limit on this to 9:45. So we'd like to just be out of here by 9:45, and hopefully that will give everyone enough time to have their concerns raised. So, Representative Hillstrom, welcome to our committee. Good to see you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
The context, you know. So
absolutely,
please.
Mr. Chair, and I really hadn't planned on participating in any public testimony on the issue. I raised some concerns that I had. Mr. Chair, especially, I don't have a copy of the statute with me, as I didn't know I was going to be testifying in the public meeting. But as you know, that the criminal vehicular operation statute allows for prosecution for more than just DWI-related offenses. So, for example, if you harm someone while you're driving and it's because you were texting or you were driving in a grossly negligent manner or you were under a drug, those are all criminal vehicular operational prosecutions that you can have. And so to apply only a DWI or an ignition interlock, which is only going to measure for alcohol, you may have someone whose conduct was completely unrelated to alcohol-related offense at all, and they would certainly say, yeah, I'll sign up for ignition interlock. I'll participate in that fashion when their conduct may have had nothing to do with alcohol, and so you wouldn't even be measuring the right thing. And so those are the concerns that I raised, Mr. Chair, and I think that those are things that this committee should certainly be considering as they're looking at this piece.
Thank you. Senator Latz, and I will have a question once you're done for Representative Hillstrom.
Sure. Thank you. Members, specifically to those points, the proposal before you would not allow ignition interlock device for CVLs or CVHs that are based upon gross negligence or texting. It mirrors the Minnesota driving while impaired statutes portions of the CVO and CVH. So it would apply in cases of DWI or CVO, CVH is based upon the presence of controlled substances, which is the current standard now also for even a misdemeanor DWI or gross misdemeanor DWI. And the theory there is that persons who have a controlled substance issue, it's typically not just one type of controlled substances. So it could be drugs, it could be alcohol. There's a fair amount of overlap there. But in terms of the gross negligence or texting, that's not covered by the proposal that you have before you today. There would be no availability of ignition interlock for those kinds of CVLs or CVHs.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hillstrom, and then we'll have a question from Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just one final piece. I don't know if you had the conversation already, but to get a CVO or a CVH, you had to have harmed someone. So you're getting your license back early by participating in this program when, in fact, you've had a crash or a behavioral incident in which someone was hurt or killed. And so as you decide whether or not you want to give that incentive to get your license back early, that really is a public policy issue that you have to wrestle with.
Okay, Representative Earhart, and then we'll also have Senator Jensen after that.
Mr. Chairman, what besides alcohol does the ignition interlock detect? Why would you install the ignition interlock with people who were not found with alcohol or whatever you're trying to detect with it?
Senator, Representative?
Mr. Chairman, the ignition interlock device does not detect the presence of substances other than alcohol. So it's just alcohol that it will determine when to allow you to start the vehicle, that there's no alcohol present in your body. That is true. The reason, and we had a long debate about this over a couple of years as we were putting this pit together, as to whether or not to include the non-alcohol but still DWI, driving while impaired, portions of the CVO, CVH in this. And the conclusion was that, yes, we should, because of the common co-location, if you will, of alcohol and substance abuse. So you still have a certain amount of protection there. But frankly, if the committee is more comfortable carving out the controlled substance CVLs and CVHs and not including that in the expansion of the ignition interlock program, I'd be supportive of following the committee's direction on that as well.
Well, Mr. Chairman,
Representative Earhart,
you're saying that everybody who is a CVO is going to be prevented from driving while impaired, but they may not have been impaired at all under this, as the way I read this. I mean, you're hanging it on somebody who has that designation, but maybe not related to alcohol. So I don't understand that at all.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Earhart, the ignition interlock program proposed before you would not apply to those who are driving while grossly negligent if it was unrelated to controlled substances or alcohol. If they're driving because they've been up at the legislature for the last 48 hours without sleeping and they doze off and cross the center line, they're not going to get their license back with ignition interlock device. Similarly, if they're texting and cause an accident and hurt someone, they're not going to qualify for the ignition interlock program.
Representative Earhart, final question.
Well, I'm not going to ask it if you're going to be that way about it.
I have a time certain that we're going to adjourn. So, you get another question, Representative Earhart. Yeah. Go for it.
Oh, no, I'm not going to ask it. It's important to the case, but I'm not going to ask it.
Okay. Senator Jensen.
Okay.
Yeah.
Representative Hillstrom, without this language, what happens in the situation to the person that you're talking about? Do they lose their license? And how long does it take?
Senator Jensen, I have not been involved in putting together this piece. I just was concerned about these other pieces that I've laid out for the committee. So I have, we didn't hear this bill in the House side. It's not part of the House language. It wasn't heard before my committee. Those issues haven't been fleshed out that I'm aware of on our side. And so I'm just responding to what I was reading.
Okay. Thank you. It's okay. So I heard Senator Latz, you say that without this language, it could take up to a year and for someone that's in that situation to have their license revoked. Is that correct? Am I understanding that correctly?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Senator Jensen, yes, in the Department of Public Safety reiterated that. And under current law, there is no implied consent license revocation promptly post-incident revocation. It has to wait until there's a criminal complaint and there's a legal process and a conviction. And then if there's a conviction, then you get the license revocation that flows. And it's true. It could be up to a year, especially the more serious cases, because those tend to take longer to get resolved in the criminal justice system. But that means you've got a person driving in a more serious case for that much longer without valid or with valid driving privileges, but still perhaps posing an even greater risk to public safety than in a routine DWI case.
Thank you.
Representative Hillstrom has a response.
Actually, I have a question for Senator Latz. So, Senator Latz, why didn't you just include it in the implied consent side of the equation and take the license through the implied consent statute in the same fashion?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Hillstrom, it's because often in the CVO and CVH cases, the law enforcement officer responding to and investigating the incident does not invoke the implied consent law at all to obtain the blood, breath, or alcohol sample upon which to base charges or a license revocation. They go straight to the hospital and under Schmerber versus California, just draw the blood.
I have nothing else, Mr. Chair.
Well, it's good to have dueling lawyers.
Thank you.
Members, are there any additional questions? Representative Beard, I think Representative Sundin is briefing Representative Beard. Members, are there any further questions? We will mull this over. If you have anything additional that you think of overnight that you'd like to make sure that the committee knows, this handout is important. Representative Beard, we had
a
couple of attorneys here dueling, and I know that you know this issue pretty well, and
yes,
I wanted to see if you wanted to weigh in as well.
Well, Mr. Chair, as you know, the ability to get people back on their feet is near and dear to my heart. As Representative Hillstrom has briefed me a little bit while I was trying to do three things at once, and I'm not even good at two things at once, but I was hearing some of the concerns about people who injure or hurt somebody else, and how that's different than someone who is drinking and putting people at risk but doesn't actually end up hurting people. And so I'm sorry I missed some of the give and take. I'm sure it was very instructional. So I'll read the cliff notes here from your staff members, since mine is up in the House chambers doing things with energy bills. I will come up to speed and we can talk a little more about this.
Okay. And, we were fortunate that our committee legislative assistant is also an attorney, so she understands this, and a defense attorney.
And Mr. Chairman, for Representative Beard's benefit, I'll refer him to the handout that I provided, publication from the Department of Public Safety. Yes, and on the bottom of it, you'll see a number of bullet points that address especially the concerns that you just raised, which I went over already in committee testimony, but that summarizes it. So I hope you get a chance to take a look at that.
Senator Dibble.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Chair, obviously, the Senate proposes this position, and as such is interested in persuading Representative Hillstrom, primarily, because I think Representative Hillstrom is persuasive to your side of the table, but also directly to your side of the table, to Senator Latz. I think what's probably most persuasive about taking this step is the improvement to public safety, the practical outcome. I understand the strong feelings about giving folks access to mobility who have done harm, but if in fact we're creating a circumstance where they're less likely to do future harm, that's maybe an outcome that we can all find is mutually agreeable. So if there's any data that shows us and points us to that from the advocacy community that helps us really understand clearly that there's an improvement to public safety by these ignition interlock programs, whether you know the traditional or moving into the CVO, CVH arena, that would be useful.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Dibble, to that point, on the bottom of the handout that I had distributed, it does cite one statistical analysis that was done that just generally on the efficacy of ignition interlock programs with a 64% reduction in DWI recidivism. So that's a pretty darn good cost-benefit analysis, if you ask me.
Well, thank you, Senator Latz. And, you know, one of the first things they teach you in conference committee chair school is don't promise to end at a time certain and then go beyond that time. So I promised 9:45, and we've had a very long day. This has been very good testimony. I really appreciate your coming down off the House floor, Representative Hillstrom, and Senator Latz, after your day and night, to come down to testify at our committee. Very, very appreciated and helpful. And we'll, you know, of course, take this up in, tomorrow as we exchange offers again. Members, with that, we will adjourn for the evening. Reconvening tomorrow at 9 o'clock, room 5 at the State Office Building. Senator Dibble will have the gavel, and we'll continue.